Are we still friends after our little presentation last night? You still my friend? Okay, now I want you to promise me one thing. That after my presentation tonight, you'll still be my friend. Okay? Will you promise me? Because I promise you that I'm going to say some things to you tonight that may make you mad. So, we're talking tonight about sharing, the art of sharing in a family. It's no secret that in our modern society, that it's very, very difficult to... The art of sharing really is a lost art. Families tell me, and it's my experience, that it's hard, first of all, just to find the time to share with each other as a family, to spend time together. But I've found also that even having time together is not the key, because many families tell me that they can spend time together, spend an evening together, a weekend together, a week together, and when all is said and done, they really haven't been together. They don't know how to share with each other, even though they have created the time and the opportunity to be with each other. There's a number of obstacles to sharing, probably dozens of obstacles, but there's a couple I'd like to mention just starting out. And one is the television set. I hope I'm not offending anyone who works for a TV station, but you cannot share together as a family while you're watching TV. It's impossible. You either watch TV and share in what you're share with the program itself, or you share with each other. It's inconceivable to me how a family can spend an evening in front of a television set and really have spent time together. Research indicates that the average child spends more time watching television during the year than he spends in school. That's the average. Some kids spend more time watching television than they spend in school. That tells me that kids are more influenced by TV than they are by their educational programs. And I think some of us are, as adults, probably come close to that record. We watch an awful lot of television. In some families, there's two TVs now. There's one for the parents and there's one for the teenagers. And the kids go to one room and watch television, and the parents go to another room. And solves the problem of the kinds of programs each want to watch, but it really prohibits any kind of a sharing experience. TV also hurts us because we have a tendency to watch baseball games on television rather than playing ball with each other. We have a tendency to watch nature movies on television rather than as a family getting out into nature and participating actively together in these areas. So TV, I think, is a major obstacle to the art of sharing for us. The second major obstacle I see has to do with the physical makeup of our homes. Years ago, the average home had half a dozen kids in one bathroom. But today, it's getting to be something like a half a dozen bathrooms and one or two children. At my house, we have four kids, and we're getting ready to add two more bedrooms and a bathroom. And I'm concerned because I think we need the room. We're going to be a lot more comfortable, but I know it'll be a lot easier for us to avoid sharing experiences. My kids now have, every one of them has to share a bedroom. And four of them are sharing one bathroom. But we're going to fix it up so they don't have to do so much sharing. And that doesn't sound too good to me. And yet I think this is the direction we're going in our American homes. Smaller families and larger physical plants to live in. And I think this is hindering our ability to share. There's not the need to share that there used to be. Then the third obstacle, I think, has to do with this thing of allowances. Allowances. We used to live on farms, and the family members all had an equal responsibility in terms of the economic support of the family. And everybody worked hard together, and the money was kind of pooled together. And then, whenever an individual family member had a need, a request was made, and it, you know, something was shared financially. But today, wives have their allowance, their spending money. The husband has his spending money for his activities. And the kids, of course, get their allowance. And it's like Dad brings home the check, and each family member takes their cut and goes off and spends their money the way they want to. And to me, that's moving us, again, away from sharing as a family. Okay, when we think of sharing, most of us think of communication, I think. Communication. And maybe a lot of you expected to come tonight and hear a discussion about communication. But you know, I think that there's two basic ingredients that are much more important than communication when you consider this thing of sharing in your family or sharing in your marriage. Communication has almost become a cliche. That's the first explanation that's given to marital problems and parent-child relationships. And communication is important, and it is a problem. You know it's a problem. But I think it's a problem because there's two more basic ingredients that are missing in our homes. The first ingredient I've labeled equality. Equality. Philippians 2nd chapter, verses 1 through 8, talks about oneness, among other things. Oneness, being of one mind. And I don't know how you can have oneness in your homes unless you have equality, an understanding that we are equal in this home. Now, the Bible talks about husbands and wives and children having different roles in the home. And we're going to talk about that because that has to do with the second ingredient. And that's important. But before you can even talk about your wife submitting herself to you, before you can even talk about your husband being the head of your home, you need to talk about equality. God made men and women. He made human beings, all human beings, equal. We mentioned the other night Galatians 3:28. In God's eyes, there is no difference between men and women. 1 Corinthians 11:11 says, and this puts it, I think, even more strongly, it says, a man is not a man apart from woman, and woman cannot be a woman apart from men. That tells me that you husbands cannot be a husband, a man, apart from your wives. Neither can you wives be a wife and a woman, a female, apart from your husbands. That's equality. One of you cannot exist apart from the other. One of you cannot fill your role apart from the other. One person's role isn't any more important than the other person. There's a number of sources of inequality in our homes today, in our Christian homes. In my practice, I work predominantly in Christian families.
In the name of the Lord Jesus.
There's lots of inequality that exists in the homes that I have contact with. And here's what I see contributing to that inequality. First of all, couples today do not seem to know how to agree with each other, how to make decisions together. Some of the couples I work with come in and say, Dr. Jones, in fact, I had one the other day, the guy was about probably in his early 60s, and they've been married 35 years. And he said, Dr. Jones, my wife and I haven't agreed on one thing in 35 years. And I had to chuckle, but inside I really wasn't chuckling. Because, you know, that's kind of a sad statement to make. We haven't agreed on one thing in 35 years. That was his view of their marriage. And as I got into trying to figure out why they weren't agreeing, I discovered something. I found the reason they had never agreed was that there was no reason for them ever having to agree. Because you see, every time they disagreed, if they couldn't agree, then he would take the bull by the horns and make the decision. And they set up a pattern like that. So that every time they disagreed, if they couldn't reach agreement, he would just make the decision. And she was a loving, submissive wife. She'd go along with it. But they never had to agree. Because, you see, there wasn't two people making that decision. There was one person. Now, there's some decisions that a husband should make exclusively. And there's some decisions that a wife should make exclusively. But there should be an awful lot of decisions that are made jointly. And many of the couples that I work with do not know how to do that. And what happens is they disagree, they can't reach agreement, and so one or the other makes the decision. And there is never any agreement. The decision is made, but they don't agree. And I try to encourage couples who have this problem to commit themselves to never making a decision unless they can agree. Again, there's some decisions that the husband should make, some that the wife should make. But in those decision areas that they should jointly be making, they should never, never, never make a decision unless the two of them can agree. And what happens, you see, is this. If they can't agree, they should table it. We can't make the decision. And yet that decision has to be made, and they know it. It may involve some financial commitments. It may involve their vacation. But to me, I think it's better to lose $500 or not take your vacation and learn eventually how to reach agreement than to go ahead, have your vacation, or make the investment, earn the money, and yet never come to grips with this thing of reaching agreement. And inequality in our homes, I think, comes in to our homes whenever one of us is taking the major responsibility in terms of decisions. Okay, that's one source of inequality. Second source has to do with submission and submissiveness. The Bible tells us that the wife is to be submissive, and I have heard 7,000 sermons on how wives should be submissive, and they're all very good sermons, and I agree with those sermons. But the sermons are preached out of Ephesians 5:22. And the other day I noticed something. That Ephesians 5:21 has something to say too. And it says, be submissive to each other. And I've never heard a sermon about that. I've never heard a sermon about that. Maybe you guys have, but I haven't. The apostle is saying there, before he gets into what the wife's responsibility is and what the husband's responsibility is, he's saying, be submissive to each other. Husbands, be submissive to your wives. Wives, be submissive to your husbands. Brothers, be submissive to your brothers and sisters. Parents, be submissive to your children. Children, be submissive to your parents. He's making a blanket statement. Be submissive to each other. Inequality exists in the home where the understanding is that the wife is to be submissive and the husband is to be the leader, and that's it. That will not work because you're neglecting the previous verse, and that is, before a husband can be the leader in his home, he too has to experience and be willing to experience submissiveness. Being able to give in to your wife when you know you're wrong. Being able to give in to your wife when you think you're right, but you know there's something that's very, very important to her, and you give in to show her that you care and you understand and you love her. Giving in to your children whenever you see that you have really made a mistake, and going to them and saying, you know, I blew it. I set a limit, and now that I look at it, I think I made a big mistake. I blew it, so I want to change that limit. And I think you were right in the first place, son or daughter. Some of us just don't know how to do that, and particularly us men. That's really a hard one for me. It's a hard pill for me to swallow. I want my wife to submit, but this thing of me submitting to her, that doesn't sit too well with me. And yet, equality in your home, it seems to me, depends on your ability to be submissive to each other. Ephesians 5:21. Now there's a third source of inequality in our homes. And that third source has to do with our interests, our individual interests. Some of the homes that I deal with that are in trouble and where there's very little sharing are homes where one family member puts his or her interests above the interests of the other people in that home. Or there are homes where parents put their interests above the interests of their children. Or there are homes where children put their interests selfishly above the interests of their parents. And the home that has equality in it, and the home that has oneness in it, is a home where everyone's interests are considered to be important, equally important. I had a very attractive, young, feminine housewife and her husband come to see me one day. And she sat down with me, and we talked a little bit. And one of the things she told me that I thought was really neat was this. She said, "Dr. Jones, my husband has 8 coon hounds. And he just loves to go out about 8 o'clock at night with those hounds and a lantern and a gun and go coon hunting. And he stays out all night." And she says, "I think that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. I'd rather have him go out on the courthouse lawn and turn cartwheels than to go out there coon hunting like that." But you know something, Dr. Jones, I found that that was a real important interest for my husband. And I told him, I said, "You know, my major interest is church and involvement in church. And you usually go coon hunting on Saturday night. I'll make you a deal. I'm going to go with you coon hunting. I'll put my blue jeans on and go out there with you all night if you'll go to church with me after we're done hunting." He said, "Fine." And they have agreed to do this, and it's worked out beautifully for them. But I don't know what my wife would do if I told her I was going to start going coon hunting. I think at that point there'd be some inequality in our home. But I think in the home that is striving for equality and striving for sharing, you wives and you husbands will stop and consider the interests that your mate have. And no matter how ridiculous they may seem, no matter how bored you are with those interests, if you want to have a sharing relationship with each other, you will get involved in some way, shape, or form with each other in those interests. Okay, so the first basic requirement to a sharing home environment is equality. Women's liberation is really hitting our country, isn't it? And you know, a lot of the women's liberation movement, I think, involves kooky women. I'm sure of it. You know, they're kooks. Right, men? You know, they just don't know what's going on. But I would like to add to that this. But there's a lot of women who are in women's liberation because at home they are given an unequal position in that home. They don't have an opportunity to involve themselves in the decision making of the home. Their husbands do not care about their interests. And their husband is continually preaching to them submissiveness, but their husbands are not submitting themselves to them. And those women are disillusioned. And they're trying to do something about the dissatisfaction and the lack of fulfillment they find in their lives. They're taking the wrong route. But I don't think that we ought to ridicule them and say that it's a bunch of kooky women. I think we need to, as men, begin to understand what's really going on in our homes and realize that those women would be in their homes if we were doing our job. All you women can say amen. Okay. By the way, women, I guess I should add this in all fairness. There's a lot of men who never come home. They throw themselves into their hobbies. In fact, I had a husband the other day say, I just find everything I can to get involved in away from home. Because when I come home, there's inequality in my home. I'm not allowed to take the position I'd like to take. So I think that there's going to be a men's liberation movement here pretty soon if you gals don't get on the stick. Okay. Equality is the first requirement. The second requirement is the acceptance of the fact that God has ordained men and women to take different roles. You can't get around it scripturally, and I'll tell you, you can't get around it scientifically. Every study we do about the family tells us this, that the families where there is equalitarianism, that is where husbands and wives' roles are equal, the children come out very, very emotionally disturbed. But you cannot raise healthy children in a home where there's no differentiation among roles. So the reason God ordained different roles for families wasn't that he was just trying to give somebody more authority or less authority or make somebody superior or inferior. He knew that if you want to turn out healthy human beings out of your family life, you've got to have your roles well defined. You as a husband have a special role, you as a wife have a special role, and the children have their role. And thank goodness for the difference in roles. Thank goodness. Some years ago, I made the mistake of giving my wife a birthday present, which involved me taking the kids for 3 days while she went to visit her parents. And I'll tell you something. I even had babysitters lined up because I knew I couldn't take it. I had babysitters, but I still had a lot of responsibility with the kids. I lost weight during that week. My appetite shot up. I drug myself into bed at night. It was a horrible experience, and I just couldn't wait for her to get home. And if somebody all of a sudden said, Jones, you've got to start taking care of those kids and your wife's going to go to work, I think that would be it for me. I don't know what I'd do. I guess I'd go over to the Golden Gate Bridge or something. But I wouldn't want that. I'm not made up for that role. So we've got different roles, and let's talk about what they are. Roles are defined in Ephesians, the 5th chapter. And you should be well acquainted with that chapter. We hear a lot of sermons about it. Let's talk first of all about the men, the fathers. Father's role in the home is that of a leader. As Christ is the head of his church, the husband is to be the head of his home. What does that include? What does it mean to be the leader of your home? First of all, leadership in the Bible, as it pertains to men, has to do with love. No place in the Bible does it say, wives, love your husbands. It never says that even once. But it says in numerous places, husbands, love your wives. And so the first requirement to leadership in your home is this. You as a husband have the major responsibility in this area of loving. Certainly your wife is to love you. You wives have a responsibility to love your husbands. But it's almost as if God says that if you as a husband will love your wife, she will automatically love you back. The husband is to take the initiative in terms of loving. Take the initiative. Take the lead. He sets the tone for the loving environment at home. How often, men, do you say, before your wife says it, I'm sorry? I find that a lot of men have a hang-up with that. They have a disagreement with their wife, or they do something wrong, and the pride or something keeps them from taking the lead and going over to their wives, putting their arms around them and saying, honey, I'm sorry that I hurt you. Usually it's the wife that says, hey, honey, come on, this has gone on for 7 days. Come on, honey, let's be friends. So the wife is out of role at that point, isn't she? She's taking the lead in terms of loving. If you guys don't take the lead, she will. But leadership in your home means you take the lead in this area of love. You don't wait for her to take the lead. The second requirement, or second part of leadership, has to do with service. Matthew 20, 20th chapter, 23rd through the 25th verse, says this: "He that is to lead must first serve." He that is to lead must first serve. I want to be a leader in my home. It feels good to be a leader. I feel like it's what I've been created to be. But I can't be that unless I am willing to first get down off of my pedestal and my podium and serve my wife and my children. Be of service to them. I need to go to my wife every once in a while and say, "Honey, I've got 3 or 4 hours. What would you like me to do for you?" Well, that's a dangerous thing to do. But that's part of being a servant. Going to a person and saying, "Here's my life. Here's my time. What would you like me to do for you?" If you've never done that, then maybe you've never really served your wife. Maybe you've been trying to lead her and you're wondering why she doesn't follow you. It could be that you don't know how to be a leader, because you cannot be a leader until you first serve. This was Christ's example to us. He didn't come down here on a high horse and sit down on the throne and the big king role. He came down here and served us. He washed our feet. He became like us. He served us. The third requirement for leadership has to do with example. Example. Paul, writing to Timothy, 1 Timothy 4:12, says to the young leaders of the church, he says, "Be the ideal, be the pattern, so that people will follow your example." And you as a husband are to be the example in your home. Wives should be examples. But the husband, part of being a leader is being a good example to your family. You want your children, you want your young girls to be modest, men. You don't want them to abuse their bodies and involve themselves in immorality. Let me ask you this: are you setting a good example for them? I don't think it's the wives, the mothers, that are creating immorality among young girls. I think it's girls watching their fathers in front of a television set looking at a program that is filled with immorality. Your kids are watching the programs that you're watching. And girls say, "Dad, he's sitting there being entertained and apparently enjoying some of these interesting programs on TV. That must mean that men really get a bang out of and really enjoy this kind of behavior. And that's what I'm going to do when I grow up." You don't want your kids to take drugs, do you? You don't want them to get hung up on that trip, as the kids say. What does your medicine chest look like, men? What do you do when you get a headache? You go in and grab a pill real quick? What do you do when you get a cold? You go in and take a Buffon? What do you do when you can't stay awake and you got to work? You go in and take a Pep pill? What is the... how do you use drugs around your home, men? Your children are watching you. And the kids today are popping pills because they're having a rough time in life. And life's putting a lot of pressures and frustrations in their paths. And they're taking pills to help them through those frustrations, because they've seen mom and dad do the same thing. Pills help us. Take a pill and you'll feel better. I believe in medication, but I think we are a drug-abusing society, and we as parents are the ones to blame, I think. We are abusing drugs, and kids are following our example. So that's another facet of our example. Have I been hard enough on you, men? Have I been hard enough on you? Should we go into the women? About time. Okay. The wife's responsibility in the home, her role in the home, is submissiveness. I'm told that in the Greek, the word submissiveness is translated responsiveness. The wife is to be responsive. The responsive wife puts her husband before her children. She never puts her children before her husband. And yet today, I see mothers putting the children first in their life. If there is an equal opportunity to spend time with the kids or with the husband, they choose the children. Let's do things with the children because they're young. They need our time. We can take it. We're older. We can neglect our relationship. The responsive wife, the submissive wife, puts her husband first in her life. And then the children come second. The responsive wife is the wife who, with the support of the husband, accepts her role in the home. The scripture has isolated verses about what the role of a husband should be. It's interesting, there's a whole chapter at the end of Proverbs, 31st chapter, that describes in very minute detail the role of the wife. I think that the role of the wife in the home is really, really important. And research bears this out. If the wife does not feel comfortable in her role in the home, research indicates that children, when they get older, will not feel comfortable with their role in life. If a wife resents her housework, if she resents having to be home and do the cooking and things like this, then when a child, for example, gets in being a student, taking the role of a student, he may resent that role because he sees someone at home resenting her role. And I think the solution is not to change our role, women, but I think it's recognizing that your role at home is a really rough role. Maybe it's a lot harder than the role of the husband. But it's an important role, and it's kind of a role of love. It's a way of expressing love to your family, doing these boring, dull tasks. You're not showing your family love by just getting out of your role and not accepting it. And then the third part of the wife's role has to do with failure. Allowing your husband and your children to fail. Failure is a no-no in our society today. Nobody, it's illegal to fail. And yet you ask any successful businessman how he attained his success, and he will tell you that somewhere in his life he experienced failure, and he learned from it, and it made him stronger. And the failure is very valuable. The scripture teaches this. Proverbs 24th verse 16th, or 24th chapter 16th verse says, the just man falls down seven times and gets up again. It doesn't say the just man never falls down. Failure is good. It's valuable. And if you want your husband to be a success, allow him to fail. Don't take up the slack. You stay in your role. You take your responsibility. Let him fail miserably. If you want your husband to lead devotions in your home, don't you take up the slack and lead devotions. Let him fail as the spiritual leader in your home. And if he will fail, the chances are very good that he will learn something from that failure. But if you take up the slack, he will learn nothing. And the chances are he'll never take the lead in any of these areas.